So we are in this season called Advent, something the church celebrates, a reminder of the way that we are waiting for Jesus. Advent simply means coming. Around us, the world is celebrating Christmas. The Christmas song started playing round about October 15th or something like that, or at least the decorations were in all the stores and everything going up. And it can be, for many, a challenging and difficult season. It can be hard as we hear songs like, it's the most wonderful time of the year. And for some of us, it's a hard time of year. There are some out there for whom this is a difficult season, as painful memories, as times of sorrow are brought back, as maybe thinking of all the other people spending time with family and you're alone. Or you're not looking forward to spending time with family. Or you're thinking of breaks within the family. And all these different things that go on. And so we hear these words, and that's one of the things I appreciate about the church's focus, the idea of Advent, is it reminds us of this challenge. It helps us understand this, because Advent, in part, is a time of longing, a time of expectation, a time of acknowledging, of saying that the world isn't the way it should be, that we're still waiting. And so Advent simply means coming, and we remember the first coming of Jesus. But we know that even with his coming and all that he did and all that he changed, that the world still is not all right. And so we're looking forward to Jesus' second coming, when things will be made completely. And so we live in between those two times. And it's a time of longing. It's a time of expectation, a time of saying, God, when are you going to make the world right? Or maybe just a, God, can you fix this right now? God, can you deal with this right now? Can you heal this hurt within me? Can you stop this war? Can you stop this pain? Can you change this thing, God? Because I know it's what you want to do. And so we long for the world to change. And we continue to live in that world that's waiting redemption. And when Isaiah spoke the words that we heard from Isaiah 35, the people then were in a hard time. So if we go back 2,700 years to the time of Isaiah, the nation of Israel was in chaos. They had corrupt leaders, people who were stealing, abusing those below them. People working in the markets had false weights and false measures. They were taking advantage. The powerful were abusing the oppressed, not unlike today. The nations of Assyria and Babylon, these giant empires, were circling Israel, waiting for the time to conquer them. And so the people of Israel are in this time of chaos, wondering. And Isaiah comes to them with words of hope and of promise. And so I want us to invite us to hear those words again today, to hear these words of hope and promise that Isaiah offers in this vision, this poem about streams in the desert. And one of the things that I know is that words of hope can sometimes be hard to hear when we're going through a hard time. I was thinking of years ago, Christine and I were visiting a friend of mine who was stationed at Fort Drum, New York. And Fort Drum is kind of northern New York. And we were coming back from his place, or heading to his place. We were in the area around Buffalo, New York. And if you're familiar with Buffalo, New York during the winter, it can be nasty. And we were on the highway, at least I think we were on the highway, because the snow was blowing so hard that I really couldn't see much past my windshield. I mean, it was one of those, but didn't have a whole lot of choices. Well, I could stop, but I don't know what's coming behind me. And so you just keep going, and every once in a while, it's like, oh, there's a truck ahead of us, and his lights are on. I hope he's on the road, because I'm just driving. And it's somewhat the same way when we're in a time of pain or a time of suffering, that the snow, all that pain around us is blinding us. And we think there's a road there. We believe there's a road there, but we just can't see it. We want to trust it's there, and that pain and that sadness can blind us to what's there or the road ahead. And we're wondering if we're on the right road, or if there is a road, or if it's been plowed. And so, like being in a snowstorm where we're not sure, when we're in pain and we're in sorrow, and somebody says, oh, there's hope, there's a path, we can't always see it. We don't even have confidence that it's really there. There were times I wasn't sure I was even on the road anymore. But I just kept driving. And so like that same thing, sometimes we're in pain and sorrow and we're not sure, is the road there? Is something happening? And so sometimes words that are offered to us in good faith, scripture we read and where we hear, oh, there's hope, there's God will take pain and suffering and he'll help us through it, that God can transform and change that. We're blinded to that. And it's hard to see, it's hard to believe even. And what I want us to do here again, these words from Isaiah, to maybe help us open our eyes and in the way he invites us to see. The way he invites us to see what God is doing and what God has done, what God is doing now, and what God will do. And he offers it in two images of what God will do. The first is a desert. He says in Isaiah 35:1, the desert and the parched land will be glad. The wilderness will rejoice and blossom like the crocus. It will burst into bloom. It will rejoice greatly and shout for joy. The glory of Lebanon will be given to it, the splendor of Carmel and Sharon. They will see the glory of the Lord, the splendor of our God. And so he's imagining this picture. He's saying, this is what God's going to do. Imagine a desert. Imagine a place that's parched and dry and barren. And when God comes, it will burst into flowers and bloom. And so something like this happens occasionally in nature. It's called a super bloom. And so occasionally there will be these things. And so here's an image of what that might look like. And so here's a place down in Chile. And almost the same scene of like, that's the normal on your left is the scene of like what it often looks like in that area. But once in a while, just the right conditions come and the desert bursts into bloom. And when Isaiah is describing this, I think this is kind of the picture he has of something. But it's not just a temporary super bloom. They go away and it looks like the desert again. And Isaiah is saying, God will come and he will transform the desert, this dry, cracked land, into a land filled with flowers. But he's not simply talking about a land, he's talking about people. And that's the second image he uses. So down in verse 5, he says, then the eyes of the blind will be opened and the ears of the deaf unstopped. The lame will leap like a deer. They're not just going to walk, but leaping like a deer. And the mute tongue shout for joy. Hear that? It's like, oh, the mute tongue is now they're able to talk. They're able to shout for joy. And the waters will gush forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. The burning sand will become a pool, the thirsty ground bubbling springs. In the haunts where jackals once lay, grass and reeds and papyrus will grow. And so he's talking about something that's just incredible. And why is he doing it? Because he wants people to have hope. And he's saying, strengthen the feeble hands, steady the hands that give way. Say to those with fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear, your God will come. And then it goes on and he says, he will come to save you. And so this is the words he's speaking. He's speaking to the people of Israel who feel like they're in that desert. The land is cracked and dry and there's no hope around them. And he says, your God will come. And that's the kind of refrain, the reminder to them. Your God will come, and what's going to happen? The desert's going to burst into bloom. There'll be streams and rivers in the desert. The lame will leap. The mute will shout for joy, and this is what God is going to do. And that's, in some sense, the core of the Christmas message, all of the Bible, is that God will come, and he has come. That in the midst of whatever is going on, God will come. And again, I said Advent. Advent simply means coming. Your God will come. If we could do the sermon in four words today, your God will come. That's the reminder to the people walking in the desert, the people walking in darkness. It's a reminder to us today. In the midst of our desert, in the midst of our snowstorm, in the midst of the floods, in the midst of whatever's going on in our lives, there's a sense that your God will come. But then you hear those words, you say, well, but can they be true? Because we imagine these people in Isaiah's day say, well, I don't know about that. Can I really believe that? So what I want us to do is, from the time of Isaiah, jump ahead a few years, actually about 700 years. And so about 700 years after Isaiah, there comes a man named John. John was born to a priest and his wife, and John was prophesied, and the angel had spoken to John's dad and told him that he was coming and he was going to be special. And so he was born to this Zechariah and Elizabeth, and there's this sense of what's going on, and John grows up, and John becomes a little bit of a societal outcast, a little bit of an oddball. He lives out in the desert, in those dry and cracked lands, and he's got a camel hair coat on, and he eats locusts and honey. He's kind of the original, like, granola eater. He's like the vegan, maybe. I don't know. Are locusts vegan? I don't know if they know. I guess they wouldn't be vegan. He's something. He's not the normal way of eating. So he's out there in the desert, and he's saying God is coming, that the Messiah is coming. He's bringing something, that God is going. And in fact, he has a cousin whose name is Jesus. And he's saying he's the Messiah. He's the one that God has promised, the one who is coming to change things. But then John is in the midst of proclaiming this, and John is also speaking truth to power, and he goes to the man who's called King of the Jews, this man named Herod, who has married his brother-in-law's wife. And John calls him out and says, no, this is not right. And so Herod does what people in power do. He throws John in jail. And so John is sitting in jail wondering what's going on. And I wonder, and we don't know, and this is purely speculation by Carl. I wonder if John is kind of wondering, wait a minute, I'm not so sure now. He's in the midst of this challenging time, and so maybe, like being in that snowstorm, he's becoming blind to the circumstances. He's wondering, well, I thought Jesus was the one who was coming. I thought he was the Messiah who was going to set all things right. I was his herald. What am I doing in jail? And so John has questions. And so we heard that he says, when John, who was in prison, and that's why he was in prison for calling out Herod, married to his brother-in-law's wife, heard about the deeds of the Messiah, he sent his disciples to ask him, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else? So John, who has spent his life, who has spent the last years standing out in the desert saying, God is coming. The Messiah is coming. And in fact, he baptized Jesus and said, this is the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. He starts to have doubts. And I think one of the things that we might draw from that story is, because at the end of that passage in Matthew, in Matthew 11 that was read earlier, it says this. It talks about him. Truly, I tell you, among those born of women, there has not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist. So Matthew makes it clear, John isn't some loser. He's not somebody who's on the outside. He's an incredible man of faith, but here he is wondering, which can be reassuring to me, to say there are the times where sometimes we wonder. Because of our circumstances, maybe because of his visions of what Jesus would do. We don't know why, but John is starting to go through that moment. It's like, wait a minute. Is he the Messiah? Or is there someone else coming? Or for us, sometimes it's, well, God, what are you doing here? I'm not sure. Are you doing something or not? And we're going through those times of wondering. And Jesus sends John a message in the midst of his wondering. And he says this, Jesus replied, and this is to the disciples. So John has sent his disciples to Jesus. And Jesus says, this is what I want you to go tell John. Go back and report to John what you hear and see. And he says what? The blind receive sight, the lame walk. Where have you heard that before? In Isaiah. It's the same thing. He's saying, what Isaiah prophesied, that's what's happening. And more than that, the lepers, people who have leprosy are clean, cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor. In other words, Jesus is saying, that promise that Isaiah made 700 years ago, it's coming true right now. Your God has come to bring transformation, to bring forgiveness, to bring healing, to bring all those things. And so the people of Isaiah's time, they heard the promises and they were brought out of exile. And then Jesus came and the picture grew brighter and more clear and grows that God has kept his promise. And he will one day see it, we will one day see it in full. And so I was thinking about what's the picture that Isaiah is offering to us? What's the picture of saying, will it look like when Jesus comes and what does it look like now? And so as we look at that picture back then, I think we can see a couple things. The first thing is, God has not abandoned us. God has not abandoned us. So go back to the people in exile. So these are the people of Israel. So quick backstory on them. They have been disobedient. They were called by God to be his people, to be his special people. They have chosen to rebel. They've chosen their own way. And so they've ended up in exile, hauled off into captivity due to their own rebellion, not somebody else. And God says to them, I'm not going to leave you there forever. You won't stay there forever. In other words, even though they had chosen their own way over his way, even though they had rebelled against him, God didn't abandon them. And it's the same thing we would see with Jesus, that he does not abandon us. Later, one of the writers, a man named Paul, says, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. In other words, God didn't abandon us. God didn't say, you keep messing up. You keep choosing your own way. You keep deciding for yourself what's right and wrong. You keep sinning, so I'm done with you. And that what Isaiah wants to say is God has not abandoned and God will not abandon us. Jesus came and didn't leave us. We were subject to sin and death. Jesus didn't leave us in that forever, but instead came to change that. And so we hear the message of Isaiah, and one of the messages of Advent, one of the messages of Christmas, one of the messages we remind ourselves is God will not abandon us. Even when we're in that storm, that chaos, and we can't see, and we're not sure if there's a road, we're not sure if there's a way, we're not sure where we're going, God has not abandoned us. The second thing we can remember is when God comes, and he will come, he brings life and abundance where there is death and decay. That's the desert. That's the lame leaping for joy and the mute shouting for joy. There's a sense where when God comes, he brings life and abundance where there is death and decay. And we can think of it this way. There is no desert that is too parched that he can't bring healing. Or to put it in more personal terms, there is no life that is too far gone. Whether we're looking at our own life or maybe the life of a friend, a family member, whatever, there is no one we can look and say, oh, God can't rescue that person. God can't save that person. They're just too far gone. And Isaiah says, there will be streams and rivers in the desert. The parched land will bloom. The lame will leap for joy. The blind will see. The mute will shout praises. God is saying, there is no person that is too far gone, that the forgiveness of Jesus, his healing, his reconciliation, his love, his advocacy, that there is no boundary, there is no wall, there is nothing that God can't reach beyond to save people. So maybe it's you. You're sitting there and you say, I don't know, I think I'm too far gone. Maybe it's a family member or a friend, and you're saying, I don't know. And Isaiah reminds us that no. When God comes, he brings abundance where there's death and decay and there is no life too far gone, no desert too parched. Individuals, community, and all of creation that God will transform. Third thing, I want to remind yourself is, it's not about us reaching God. Because what's the promise of Isaiah? It says, your God will come. It isn't, well, you'll figure your way out of this storm. You'll figure your way through this desert. You'll stumble your way out of the desert and find the little oasis that God has made for you. It's down there. Just work hard and you'll get to it. Instead, God says, I will come. I will come to you in the midst of what it is. So like John Oswald in his commentary on Isaiah said this. He says, to the heart which cries, he is too far away. I cannot reach him. The answer is, you do not have to reach him. He comes to you. So God has been coming to us across the millennia through the process of revelation, in the acts of his providence, in the first coming of Christ, and he will continue to come until that last day when we will be united with him forever. So when we cry out, no, it's too far, God says, I will come to you. That's the story, that God will come to us, and he has come to us. And God comes to us so that we might also come to him. And so at the end of Isaiah, at this passage in chapter 35, and the highway will be there, will be called the way of holiness. It will be for those who walk in the way. And then it goes on, he says, No lion will be there, nor any ravenous beast. They will not be found there, but only the redeemed will walk there. And then continues, and those the Lord has rescued, in other words, those the Lord will come to, they will enter Zion with singing. Everlasting joy will crown their heads. Gladness and joy will overtake them. And sorrow and sighing will flee away. It's this incredible promise of homecoming that when God's people are in the midst of challenge trial, God comes to them and then brings them home. And that image that he uses there, it's like the language, the poetry of it. It says, gladness and joy will overtake them. And it is one of those things I think about, that joy is something that it comes all of a sudden on us and we can't always explain it. Frederick Buechner, a pastor, writer that I enjoy, he talks about one time visiting SeaWorld. He said, it's just silly, he's watching these killer whales and these people, they're feeding the whales. And he said he's watching them and these animals performing and stuff. And he said all of a sudden he found himself with tears in his eyes. And he said he couldn't understand it, but he thought about it later. And what was strange was about a month later, he was at a conference and he was telling this story. And a priest from England came up to him and said, 2 weeks ago, I was preaching a sermon and I had also been to SeaWorld. And I watched the killer whales and I had tears in my eyes. And they just had this conversation about this moment when they watched this incredible event, because in some sense they were seeing, and what Buechner talks about seeing was a picture of the peaceable kingdom, a picture of the lion laying down the lamb, because these are, we call them killer whales. I mean, that just, the name itself kind of speaks volumes, doesn't it? I mean, it's not like the cuddly whale, it's the killer whale. And here they are just swimming around and they're with people and they're swimming with people in this thing. And these are these whales. And Buechner says, I can't explain it, but in this moment, it's as if God showed me something. And I know I've had those moments too. And you've probably had those moments too, where maybe you're listening to a song. Maybe you're sitting on the beach watching a sunset. Maybe you're just having a conversation with someone or holding a baby, doing something. And all of a sudden, from out of nowhere, it seems there's just this joy, this feeling that overwhelms you. And maybe it's tears in your eyes or there's a smile that crosses your face. And when Isaiah is describing that, he's describing that moment. He says, when God comes, it's not as if we have to say, oh, look, God's coming. I better be happy about it. It's just this, we're overtaken by joy. When we experience God's love, when someone else experiences God's love and his grace to us, we don't have to stop and think, oh, it's time to sing because God did something good. It's just this moment where we're overtaken by joy. And Isaiah is saying, this is what it's going to be like. When God comes, we are just overtaken by joy. It overwhelms us and we don't understand it. It's not something we create, but it's simply a response to what God has done. And then he goes on and he says, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. Isn't that a great picture? See, when God comes, it's like, you know, the sorrow, the sigh, all this, the sighing and sighing is kind of like this, this groaning, this thing that's going on. When God comes, that stuff's just going to run away because it can't be around this sense of thing. And as we hear this story, what I want you to hear this morning is, this isn't a message, this isn't a story where now you need to go home and do something with it. Because sometimes we read the Bible story, we read our Bible during the week, or we hear a Sunday sermon and we think, but I've got it, there's got to be some action step. There's got to be something I do with it. And what I want you to hear this morning is, this is simply good news to hear. It's simply good news to proclaim. There's not some action you have to take, not some task. There's not some list of disciplines that you need to go and try and implement in your life or some change you have to make in your life. I want you this morning to simply hear the good news proclaimed, that your God will come, that he came at Christmas in the form of a baby. He grew up to be a man and showed us the way of love and life. He gave his life on a cross and then God raised him from the dead and he ascended to the right hand. And he gives love and life to all and offers forgiveness. And that same Jesus will come again as a king to transform all things and bring new life. Your God will come. Your God has come. Your God will come. Your God is coming. It might be hard to see right now. It might hard to be see right now what's going on. But hear the good news. There is no place you are that is beyond God's reach. There's no place anyone is that is beyond God's reach. There is no desert too dry, no life too far gone. The God who came will come again to transform us and lead us home. So hear these words this morning. Hear these words of good news. Even if your hands and your knees are weak and trembling, or perhaps especially if they are, that your God will come. And there will be streams and rivers in the desert. The lame will shout for joy. The lame will leap for joy. The mute will shout. The blind will see. Your God will come and bring healing. He came as Jesus to bring forgiveness and reconciliation, and he will come again to make all things right. There will be streams in the desert. We'll be overtaken by joy. And sorrow and sighing will flee away. And our God will come. Amen.